It would be the true chesed. He would
have to wait. All right, let's go. Malachim Aleph. We are in Perek Zion. We're up to Pasuk Chav Gimel. In this parak, discusses the actual construction of the Beis HaMikdash, the various items that are found in the Beis HaMikdash. Last week, we spoke about two pillars, one which I like a lot more than the other. One of which is named Yochin, the other one is named Boaz, which you can see on Pasuk Chav Beis mentions the names. We spoke about the symbolism of these two pillars. We spoke about also the person who is appointed to be involved in making not just the pillars, but other things, including the sea, which is going to be a huge washing basin, which we'll discuss today, and other things that he made. His name was Hiram. It was Hiram as well as Shlomo, those two people, good morning, that worked side by side. But Hiram was a master in making things, fashioning different items and vessels with the choshes, with copper. He was a coppersmith. So one of the things that he made were these two pillars, Yochin Uboah. Those are the two pillars. I couldn't find it last week, and it happened to be right over here. I mentioned that there's actually a commentator in Mishnayot, which is called, you have your glasses or your magnifying glass, Yochin Uboaz. It's actually a commentator in the Mishnayot. It's named after these two pillars that we learned about last week. And so we talked a little about the symbolism of what each one represents. One represents the sun, one represents the moon, different symbolism behind about
them. Any place else that items are named,
right? Right. No, it's because, in fact, when we're going to see the sea, which we're going to talk about, this huge washing basin, he doesn't name it anything. It's just that's just what it is, doesn't right? So, right. But as we mentioned, that the idea of the sun and the moon, which people worship, so that, of course, is a huge mistake, the form of idol worship. You go into the Beis HaMikdash, still there's the sun and the moon, which was represented by these two pillars, which we discussed that Yochin represents the moon, as we said, because the moon is something which we use to prepare, which is a hachana, the holidays. And Boaz means strength. Take one look at me, you know that. Boaz represents strength and power, which is the sun. The sun is
energy.
Power, right? It's solar energy and all this stuff. Yeah, Boaz, right? That's what it says. It's the break of that word. So you go into the Beis HaMikdash and you realize that the sun and the moon are just servants to God, as are we. And we are to do God's bidding as the sun gets up, only because that is the will of Hashem. And the moon, which waxes and wanes, which is a representation of Klal Yisrael in general, that when the chips are down, we can always turn things around. That's what the moon represents. So these are all different powerful messages of when a person goes to the Beis HaMikdash, they always have that opportunity to change, and also to be like the sun, that every morning you should have that same energy, enthusiasm, and excitement to do the mitzvos, just like the day before. Okay. Again, we spoke about that at greater length. Let's now move on with Pasuk Chav Gimel. So now we're going to discuss other things that Hiram constructed for the sake of the first temple, first Beis HaMikdash. So he asks us, Hayom Mutzok, that he made the Yam. Yam, like we think of the Mediterranean Sea, is the Yam HaGadol. The Yam is a sea. Well, he didn't actually make a sea, but he made something so big, such a huge body of water, that it became as though it was like a sea. It was Mutzok, and he made it out of this copper metal. Exactly how big was this? Eser ba'alma, misafaso ad safaso. If you would measure from one edge to the next, the diameter from one edge to the next, it would be 10 cubits. So if we want to say a cubit, which is measured from the elbow to the middle finger, which is, let's call it 2 feet, so it's 20 feet from one side to the next. Agol, it was round. V'chamish ba'alma komaso. Its height was 5 amos, which is like 10 feet deep, so like a nice swimming pool. The Kav Shleishim Ba'ama Yatsov Oso Saviv. And for 30 Amos, there was a line around it, which means the circumference was 30. And as we mentioned before, which is the symbolism of pi, is that whenever you have the diameter from one side of a circle to the next, is 1, so its circumference rounding down is 3, a 1 to 3 ratio. So therefore, that's basically what's being said over here, is that if you have from one side it's 10, so it's 30 around. Of course, it's not being exact, but even in the times of the first base of Mikdash, they already understood these dimensions and these mathematical equations. 3.14. Last week we spoke about the symbolism of 3.14. If anyone did their homework, they're supposed to look up in the book of Exodus, Per Gimel Pasuk Yud Dalet, and you'll see something quite interesting about the how God is infinite. And it's just like a circle, never ends. That's the symbolism of a circle. If you look in the book of Exodus, as I mentioned last week, you'll see in Per Gimel, Pasuk Yud Dalet, when Moshe asks, what is God's name? The answer is, Eyah Asher Eyah, I will be what I shall be, which means that's the infinite name. There's no way to, no limitations, which is, again, Per Gimel, Pasuk Yud Dalet, 3:14. Okay, so this is this huge pool, this huge body of water that was made. So we look in the English on the left side on page 73, it gives us a little bit more of a perspective exactly how big this pool was. So it says the sea. The tabernacle in the wilderness had a kior, a copper laver, which the copper tank was filled with water from the Kohanim, in which the Kohanim washed their hands and feet. They washed their hands and feet since the temple service had to be performed barefoot. You have to take off your shoes. That's the reason why Kohanim take off their shoes when it comes to when they bless the Jewish people. And I mentioned a few years ago in Parsha Shemos when Moshe was asked to take off his shoes, the symbolism of taking off their shoes is that a person wears something on their feet, you don't feel what's underneath you. It's a disconnect from the world around you. When you take off your shoes, this is how some people explain it, you feel every pebble, every stone. So the idea is to be a leader, you have to be sensitive of everything around you, and not just to clothe yourself up and protect yourself, but rather you have to feel the outside. And that's the same symbolism of the avoda. To serve God means is the acknowledgement there's something outside of ourselves. That's the ultimate purpose of doing mitzvos, is to recognize the world is not about me. It's about recognizing that there's a God, there's other people in this world. So that's why they take off their shoes, which is a symbolism of sensing. That's another... I was thinking about that a little bit. I think the idea is that they have this degree of sense. There's two ways of looking at it. Either they have this element of sensitivity, and therefore the symbolism of them feeling it is by having their shoes off. Right? That's the representation of it off. The other idea is that when it comes to an onin, which is not really exactly a great answer I'm about to say, but before the funeral service takes place, there's no mitzvahs that they have to do. And the reason is that when a person is an onin, all they're thinking about is themselves. They cannot think outside themselves. That's the reason why, as Hamar Shiv explains, that you cannot do a mitzvah. The whole purpose of a mitzvah is recognizing there's something outside of you. So we cannot obligate you to do such a thing. So the symbolism, I think, of taking off the shoes, as I was thinking about last week, is to try to get them from the process of only thinking about themselves to try to start thinking about other things. So taking off the shoe is feeling things around you. That's how I understand it. It needs a little bit more work, but that's how I thought about it. Thank you. Anyway. Baruch Hashem. I'm going to buy a lottery ticket after this. It's my lucky day.
The day's not over yet.
This is good. I can't wait to see what's going to happen next. Okay. We're still in the middle of this paragraph in English. Go ahead.
In today's society, the Kohen takes off his shoes, but he doesn't take off his socks.
No, I was thinking about that too.
Thank God.
But it says here that they perform the service barefoot.
Right.
So if we're going to...
I think barefoot just means without shoes.
They didn't wear socks.
I don't think they
were. Yeah, they didn't wear sandals, basically.
They didn't wear socks. Right. So barefoot just means taking off your shoes.
Right. Yeah. I mean, nowadays it's probably more of a kavod sibor to not walk around barefoot, but if you're in an environment, maybe in Israel or whatever, they probably do have nothing on their feet at all. So, but That's how they did the avodah, without socks. You're absolutely right. Let's just continue in this English, if that's okay, in the middle of the paragraph. It says the peril vessel in Solomon's temple was the sea. So that was the tabernacle in the wilderness, the Mishkan. So this also, its purpose was to allow the Kohanim to wash, so-called because of its huge size. The purpose of the washing was for sanctity, by sanctifying their hands and feet, which represent the upper and the lower extremities of the body. The servants of God symbolize their total devotion to the service they're about to perform. For the same reason, the sages instituted the Jews should wash their hands before they pray. So the symbolism we often find, like when a person's really cold, so usually what ends up happening is your extremities, they end up getting cold the fastest, because it's the most disconnected from the heart, the center of your body, which is the most important part of serving Hashem. But the idea of cleansing even your hands and feet means that even the things which are seemingly the furthest away from your heart, you should also connect and serve God with. That's the idea of washing the hands and the feet in general. Why we wash our hands and why they wash their feet. Okay, and let's just see this next paragraph, which is also important to recognize. Doesn't mean there was a nice diving board and an Olympic-sized pool which you could do laps in. This was not a typical... Well, it was a mikvah. That's what it says here. Normally, water contained in a movable vessel, which is called mayim shuvim, may not be used as a mikvah for ritual immersion. But the sea was made in such a way that this problem was avoided. The water in the sea was connected to, I'm not sure how it was done, but this is what it says, to flowing underground wells by means of holes in the feet of the copper oxen that supported the sea, which we'll get to the oxen in a second. It was therefore considered as if the Kohanim were immersing themselves in the wells, or as part of the mikvah. So, a mikvah, as we know, has to be natural rainwater, at least the first 40 saw, the minimal measurement, and then afterwards we do add tap water, heat, hot water, whatever it may be, but the starting point has to be actual rainwater, megashamim. You cannot have drawn water, and that's, of course, to get into all the hilchos mikvos, but very, very briefly, that's one of the important things is of a mikvah is the roof, because there cannot be any parts of the roof which is cut or which cannot hold even a drop of water. If there's a crack in the roof, it all has to be completely smooth and it has to go and flow naturally. Otherwise, it's considered mayim shuvim. Maybe it's rainwater, but if you take rainwater and you catch it in a cup, then you dump it into a mikvah, that's not rainwater anymore. It's considered drawn water. And of course, there's a lot to discuss about that topic. But the idea here is that this was actual mikvah. Okay, and why the symbolism, again, of why it's rainwater, that's something worthwhile thinking about. There's obviously there's logical reasons behind that, too. Anyway, so that's the first thing. So now we know that he had this huge mikvah in which everyone would immerse themselves in. And obviously, there was a lot of Kohanim, so he didn't want them to have to wait. So therefore, he figured to make a very large one. This way, everyone would be able to become tahar, or to purify themselves immediately, without having to delay by waiting for the person in front of them. Okay, so let's now move on to the second pasuk, pasuk Abdalim. B'kohanim mitachas l'safaso saviv sovivim oso eser ba'ama ma'kifim es hayom saviv. So the pasuk tells us that there were these pekoim, which were knobs, which we'll see some nice pictures coming up shortly, that were surrounding it, saviv, which is surrounding it. 10 amos Koma so 10 almost really was its height. Makifan is a yom saviv that it was all the way around, which means it's a length from one side to the next. Shtei turim, there were two rows. Hapikoyim yitzukim b'sukaso, that there were these two rows of knobs that were cast with the casting of the sea. Now, if we look at the English again, just to understand this a little bit better. If you look at 23, page 73, it says that there were circular all around. Well, first of all, it says Mutsav cast metal. The tank was made through casting, which means pouring molten copper into a mold rather than beating the copper into shape with hammers. And if you look down a couple paragraphs where it says circle all around, the sages or the Talmud and Erevin says the tradition that the sea held enough water, we'll see this in Rashi later on too, for a hundred, equivalent of 150 mikvaos, or ritual pools. We'll see that later on. And it says a couple sentences later, consequently the Talmud states that the lower three cubits of the sea were cube-shaped, and only the upper two cubits were round. So even though part of it does show that it was round, but the bottom of it was square. And then verse 24, which we just read, when it says knobs, it's egg-shaped decorative protrusions. However, the decorations are described as figures of oxen, and the Radak explains that the knobs are basically oval-shaped, but their outer extremities were fashioned into ox heads, which is kind of unusual, but we'll discuss when we talk about another one of his, the smaller laver stands where the washing station was, how he also fashioned oxen again. What's the significance of oxen? We'll see that in a second. So let's move on to Pasuk Chaf Hey. So what Pasuk Chaf Hey says that Oy made al shnei Asar Bakar Shloisha Poinim Safoina Shloisha Poinim Yama Shloisha Poinim Negma Shloisha Poinim Mizracha. So hopefully no one here is members of PETA, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. You're going to be very offended when you hear the sentence that what he did to hold, can you imagine, this very heavy pool, he didn't put it on the ground, he took a bunch of animals, oxen.
They were real animals?
They're right, I know. I know. But someone who jumped to conclusions would think that it's mistreatment to animals. But he, yes, they were not real. But they looked real. They were made out of copper, so they didn't look very real. But you knew that that's what they were supposed to be pictures of. And in fact, on page 75, you can see exactly what it looked like. Let me just translate this passage. There was 12 of them. We'll see why 12. There's a reason 12 is no coincidence. 12 of these oxen. 3 were in the north, 3 in the east, 3 in the west, 3 in the south. So there are 3 on each side. Everything was equally proportioned. No ox was bigger than the next. They were all the same size. And they were all holding the same weight. They were all together, equally balanced. Obviously, if you would move one of those oxen, the whole thing would be off kilter, would fall apart. You needed all 12. And then you want to say, well, gee, can you imagine? You want to take a, you want to wash your hands, and you see the back of the animal staring right in the face. So the pasuk says, don't worry about it. That's not what happened. The whole achirehem, their backs were boisa, were in the inside. So if you look on page 75, all you would see were the faces of the oxen. You didn't actually see the backsides. It's brought down the miyamloes through the means of ladders. It doesn't really discuss it, but yeah, you're right. That's how the Man Lois says there was probably ladders, not only on the up to go up, but also in the inside. There were probably ladders, very similar to a swimming pool. So the pasuk doesn't mention it. You're right. There usually would not be a step there in the Beit HaMikdash, maybe it would be a ramp. We don't have steps. The Torah says specifically, you're not supposed to have steps. It's brought the last pasuk in Parshas Yisro. The pasuk says, "Ki sigaler batcha lav." All the way to the bottom shelf over there. Still for it. What was that again? I'm sorry. Oh, right. There are ramps. Right. At the very end of Parshas Yisro, which, if you're anxious to actually hear this, if you come to Shul on Shavuot, you will hear this actual sentence being read.
What day?
The first day, which we have the Aseres Adibros, when we read about the actual Decalogue, the Ten Commandments, in part, which is The first time it's mentioned is in Parshas Yisro. Don't worry, it's a short reading, so if you come late, you're going to miss it. But in Parshas Yisro, it ends off the after we talk about the Ten Commandments. It says, you got it. Okay, you're looking it up too. Good. But I want to be able to translate it over here. The last sentence in Parshas Yisro says, V'osala b'malos al mizbechi, you shall not ascend my altar on steps, asher lo sigale ervatcha alav, so that your nakedness will not be uncovered upon it. And the idea, hopefully there's English over here so I don't have to explain it. If the Kohanim were required to mount the altar on steps, the raising of their legs as they walked up would seem to expose their private parts to those steps. And the Torah frowns upon even the slightest suggestion of immodesty. Therefore, the Kohanim walked up the altar on a ramp so that their legs would move evenly. Okay, and they could discuss this more.
They
did have pants. Pants. It's a good question, but I don't want to think about it too much, to be honest. But that's what the Torah says. That obviously these baggy pants, perhaps when one would take a step, your leg, the pant leg would go up a little bit, and therefore you would be revealing even the smallest amount of one's leg. Just, which even the slightest level of immodesty would be disrespectful to the glory of Hashem. Obviously, this is the base Hamikdash. This is not, on the beach over here. This is the base Hamikdash. So in the base Hamikdash, the levels of sniut obviously have to be at its highest. But that's the only reason why I mentioned that to you is because there were no steps. That's my point.
They said up to the altar, to the...
That's a good point. The question, maybe it's a distinction. That's a good question. I'm not familiar with, is it? And that pasuk only tells us to get to the altar, right? There were ramps. But it doesn't really talk about anything else. The way I always interpreted it was there were no steps. But you know what? I may be wrong. Yeah. Good. I know what you're thinking.
Yeah, that's what he said.
There had to be steps going down to the sea. There was no way.
There could have been like a ladder. A ladder. But that's still an issue. It's still an issue.
Otherwise, they couldn't get in and out. They couldn't go.
You're right. It's an interesting issue that for some reason is not brought up.
Aren't we God's creation? Isn't every part of our body has a purpose?
Yes.
And one of them is cool.
Yes.
Which is the biggest.
But you don't show it to the world.
You don't show it to when you're walking in the street and when you're walking up the stairs. You just don't show it. Even though it's there. So
you're answering your question or you're...
No, I'm still at the...
She's formulating.
I mean, you are right. Adam HaRishon called him a chet. Before Adam sinned, and Adam and Chava, they did not have to wear clothes.
Yes, and when you are in front of Hashem in Beit HaMikdash, what are you covering?
You're right.
What can you cover?
So we should...
At those stages.
I understand what you're saying. And this is... The question is, no, but it has to be with Kedusha. Are there other people from the 60s that have the same approach, but it's because... Their whole essence is physical. Our essence has to be spiritual, but there's still there is this disconnect because we are living in a physical world that we cannot elevate ourselves to the level of Adam before sin, and therefore we do have this physical self that we cannot connect to God or as was able to have been done.
Later.
I understand what you're saying, but you have to know which direction one is coming from in such a question. Okay? All right. So let's just, if we can look for a moment in the English over here on the bottom of page 74, it talks about the unbelievable symbolism of these oxen. Why do you have to have oxen? Just put it straight on the ground. There's a lot to talk about, a lot of symbolism, which is beautiful. This next paragraph. So it says like this: it stood upon 12 oxen, the bottom of page 74. The tank was placed on top of 12 copper oxen, which supported its enormous weight. The 12 copper oxen symbolized the 12 astrological constellations. The sea, which rose above them, symbolized the moon. The Jewish nation, which is likened to the moon and which is guided directly by God, will rise above the nations whose destiny is regulated by the constellations. So we have, there is a concept, and not to get in too much depth, but we do believe in the astrological signs, that what we read about is actually true. Those, you know, obviously, you pick up the newspaper and what it tells you, you know, your whatever's going to happen to you today, that's a joke. That means nothing. But there really is a reality to it. And if you study them, you see they're all connected to the moon. It's all connected to the lunar calendar, not the solar calendar. And the most obvious reason why there's no one that disagrees with that, ever, it's a fact, I'm not talking about Jewish, I'm talking about in the world, is you look at when these each one begins. It doesn't begin on the first of the month. It doesn't begin on January 1st, February 1st. That's because it's connected to the lunar calendar, not the solar calendar. All these things are connected to the lunar calendar. And we know that they're all true. If you look at each one has different symbolism. That just to give a couple of them, Aries, which is the ram, right, corresponds to Pesach time, right, which happens to the, right. You have the scales, which is another one, which is the most famous one, which is the, which one? Could be. I think so. It has to do with, happens during the times of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, when we're being judged, right? And we have the one of the twins, Gemini, happens during Shavuos when we receive the Shtei Luchot, the two tablets, right? The Shtei Luchot. All these things are connected. But even though there are the stars, or we're under the stars, the reality is that Ein Mazir Yisrael, that we can elevate ourselves above that. We are really in charge and control of our own destinies. And that's the symbolism about how we are likened to the moon. That even when the moon goes down, it can go back up, it waxes and wanes, as we said before, that's what we are able to do too. That's what the Jewish people are. And the moon controls, so what does the water have to do with the moon? Because we know the ocean, the Yam, is, and the waves are controlled by the moon's, help me out over here, gravitational pull, right? It has to do with the way the moon is, affects the tides and the waves. Fact. So that makes sense that this, which is called the Yam, is connected, is the Levan, is opposite the moon, which the moon affects the sea, which is the sea, that is the Yam Shel Shlomo. Continuing, if you look in the next paragraph, alternatively, the 12 oxen represent the 12 united tribes of Israel. So says the Zohar. Just as all 12 oxen were needed to support the weight of the sea that served to purify the Kohanim, the unity of the Jewish people is the means for their purification. In order to become pure, you need unity. If there's a lack of achdus, there's a lack of unity, then you're not going to have purity. Because if you have a lack of unity, that means you're harboring hatred in your heart. If you have this negative energy inside of you, then it's not possible for you to be completely pure. Pure, if you think like pure water, something which is clear, clean, the only way that that's possible is if you don't have hatred. If you don't hate other people, if you love everyone, and you can, everyone's connected as one, that's when you can become purified. But also, so that's the idea. If you remove one of those oxen, the whole thing will fall apart. Each one has the same weight, same burdens to hold. And therefore, it shows that no matter which tribe you're part of, no matter who you are, you should not think that you're better than another person. Going back to the Machzis HaShekel, the half coin.
Why
the half shekel. Everything is equality. Okay, that's the symbolism that everyone in Kleinshow is necessary. No tribe is better than the next, and that's going full circle. Why we said Shlomo, who was on the top tribe, chose Hiram, who was from the most lowly of tribes, to show that God does not look upon you differently because of your affluence, of your power. Rather, He looks at every person equally. And that's the idea and the symbolism of this. If you look at the thing about the Kohanim, their job is to serve God. And therefore you can think, you know what? They are the ones that are important. The other guys that are simple people, and they're, you know, making a living, and what are, they're running around, they're not spiritual, they're not important. No, no, no. In the purification of those Kohanim, it shows that in order for them to be supported, which could be financially also, being supported, the Kohanim being supported, are these 12 oxen, as though to say that every Jew is necessary for me to be able to do the Avodah, to serve God. I need everyone. I need you as well. You're also important. You're part of this process too. So it's a way of not excluding anyone, and that even the Kohanim should realize that the only reason why we're here is because we're being supported by the oxen, which are the animals that are the beasts of burden that hold up things, hold things together. So that's the different messages of these animals. Okay, moving on. Pasuk Hava. Okay. V'ayvu tefach usafos l'kamasi svas kois perach shushan. It says that the thickness of these walls, you can imagine it's holding so much water, had to be a tefach, which is a hand breadth, was about 4 inches from its edge. The edge was comparable to the safas kos, the edge of a cup, which is something rounded off. Perach shushan, in which had these beautiful designs of flowers and roses. Apayim bas yachil. And it was, Yachil was able to hold Alpayim, 2,000. What does that mean, it was able to hold 2,000? So, this is the Rashi that says it's comparable to 150 mikvaos. But if you look in the English over here, where it says Alpayim bas yachil, its capacity was 2,000 bath measures. If you look toward the end of that paragraph on the left side on page 75, thus, 2,000 baths is equal to 6,000 sa'os, a sa', or 150 times the minimum capacity of a mikvah or a ritual bath, which must be at least 40 sa'. And then just the last sentence to paint a little picture over here. Opinions vary regarding the modern equivalent of a bath. It's estimated to be between 6.75 to 12 gallons, so that the sea held as much as, as little as 13,500 gallons, or possibly as much as 24,000 gallons of water. Just to give you an idea, that now you understand what people thought of it, it was a yam. It was a yam, not just because it was large, but in comparison to 10 other small little washing stations, it was much larger than them. What are those 10? That's what we're going to see right now. Well, it was connected to a natural flowing body of water. So there was some movement. Enough movement?
Yeah.
Maybe we don't have to think about that too much, but at least it wasn't stagnant water. It was just getting
outside.
It's the answer to that question we will see toward the end of this parak, exactly where this was placed. You're right. Right now, it doesn't say. In fact, there's going to be a dispute when we get to Pasuk Lamed Tes, verse 39, exactly where the sea was placed. Let's see it when we get to it. So Pasuk Lamed Tes, if you want to look it up, it's verse 39. Okay, Pasuk Hav Zayin. All right. So now we're gonna fly a little bit here. So let's buckle down and hopefully we have our seatbelts and everything. Let's go. Pasuk of Zion. V'yas es hamachonos es nechoshes. So he made also 10 copper stands, in which there's a picture of it, which a lot of psukim are going to be discussing. There's 11 of them, to be precise, which will be on page 75. He made 10 of these stands. Arba ba'alma oirech hamachon ha'achas, that the length of one of them was 4 cubits. The arba ba'alma rachbo is 4 wide, so it was square, it's 4 by 4. The shul, obviously, there's a symbolism of 4, which we'll t- talk about next week. The Shosh Ba'amo Kamasa. And 3 amos, or 6 feet, was its height. Much smaller. Zem Ma'aseh HaMachoyna Misgoris Lehem. And this is exactly how this Hiram made these stands. He, first of all, he had Misgoris Lehem. He made frames. And Misgoris Bein HaShalab. And regarding these frames, he had rods. And we'll see. You can see on the bottom of page 75 exactly how, where the rods were placed. V'al ha-misgaros, and again regarding these frames, asher ben ha-shalavim, which were between the rods, and if you look at this picture, you can understand a little bit better. Arayos bakar kruvim v'al-shalavim kein mimol. It says there he engraved different pictures. He made pictures, a picture of a lion. Bakar is an ox. Ukruvim and the cherubs, which are angel-like figures or look like people. Val Shalom came him out. And with regard to the base, so he placed them. Came him out, he put them on the top. And mitachas l'rayos, and underneath these pictures of the lions, the bakar, and the ox, l'rayos masse moirod. He underneath them were braces of hammered metal. Now, obviously, the fact that he made these specific pictures, there is some reason behind it. And hope. What's the significance of those pictures? We'll see. Let's see if we look in page 77 in English. These wagons, which we're going to actually see, they look like wagons because they're going to have wheels and everything, which the next plus is going to talk about. Why did he choose these particular animals and figures? So if you look on page 77, you see the following. It says, Arayos Bakar Kruvim, lions, oxen, and cherubim. Oh my. These were similar to images Ezekiel saw, Yechezkel, in his vision of the Markava, the Masa Markava. Okay? So there's no coincidence that he chose these particular figures. What Ezekiel saw, only through prophecy, Solomon was able to perceive through his unparalleled wisdom. So Yechezkel had this vision, which is the very beginning of Sefer Yechezkel, the very first chapter. And in fact, in the second chapter of Chagiga, which we learn on Shabbos in the Talmud, it discusses that this vision, there's what's called the Chashmal, which is someone who would perceive it would actually think that they're perceiving and seeing God himself, because it discusses the image of God. Of course, God is, it's a type of an angel or a figure. It discusses it. Yeah. And basically,
now, but they didn't have electricity then.
Right. That's the, it has to do with
thought.
There's lights in this. Right, exactly. And it discusses over there about God's throne. And God's throne, which we may have discussed before, has 4 sides. And on one side, there was an eagle, which is not mentioned over here. And it has an ox, which is what we're talking about here. It has a lion. And it has the cherubim, a picture of a face. On all four, on each side is one. Right, right. And there's the whole discussion exactly about the oxen, because the oxen itself may remind God of the golden calf, or can remind us.
The 3 oxen with 4 faces. You only see the faces, you don't see the bodies.
Right.
Wherever you go, you see a face.
Right, right. Right. That's the idea.
Wherever you go, you see a face.
Right. Right, so the idea of God's throne, that's what's on God's throne, is that these are the 4 powers of the world. The eagle is the most powerful, or the greatest bird. The ox is the domesticated animal, which is the most. The lion is the king of the jungle. And the cherub is a person.
Human.
Right, so, and the idea is we elevate ourselves above the animal kingdom, but yet God is above everything. That's the symbolism of it. And for some reason, he felt that it was important also to put these symbols on this particular wagon when one washes themselves.
And the front is also
What about it?
The fun is in that figure that's in the fun.
Right, the question is why what's the meaning of the wheels? Oh, because that's the whole wheel, the wheel of the chariot. That's the whole, Ezekiel's chariot.
In that description of the chariot, yes.
Right. Because they can ask, yes, why does he need wheels for? Where is it going? It's in the base of Mikdash. It's not going to another location.
I'm talking about
the
dream.
Ezekiel's dream.
Yeah.
I'm saying that it's about a chariot, right? It's talking, which has wheels on it, right? Which is the same thing as this, has wheels on it. So it's all connected.
Every way it turns, it's front.
Right. Like that's what, like the Knights of the Round Table. There's no, right? Everyone's equal. Everything's equal. But perhaps that's the symbolism is when they cleanse themselves, they have to realize that, on one hand, they're above the animal kingdom, right? But yet, God is above them. And that's when they rinse themselves and cleanse themselves, they have to realize that that's the message behind this. So, if we look also in the English, where it says, embracing couples, okay, which is the one part which I you do that pasuk what we sell pasuk chavtes. It said that mitachlos neres baruch leos masi moirad. It said that there were these. I'm sorry. Let's see pasuk. It's mislabeled. Let's look at pasuk lamed, and we'll stop after that. The arba oifanei nechesha. So the oifanim of these wheels, which were made out of copper. And discusses at great detail how these wheels are made. So it says these wheels had copper boards and had shafts at their four corners. So it says that the shafts were cast under the basin, opposite each of the embracing couples. So it's interesting, there's another thing of embracing couples. So if you look at the English over here, we'll just spend 3 minutes and we'll stop. This is unbelievable over here. So listen to this. It says, under the etchings of lions, oxen, and the cherubim mentioned early in the verse, there are etchings of a male and a female human embracing. Imagine that? In the Beit HaMikdash is a picture of a man and woman hugging one another. So you say, that's a... You know, it's not sneeze. You got to rip those pictures out of every history book. You know, in the Beis HaMikdash was a picture of a man and woman embracing. Obviously, you're probably thinking it's very interesting that it's connected to water or a mikvah, which corresponds to Tarat HaMishpacha about when a man and woman come together after they have reached the level of tahara, of connecting after going to a mikvah. And then it says like this, these images symbolize the intense love between God and Israel. The metaphor for the mutual affection between God and his people is also the theme of Song of Songs, which was composed by Solomon. And we discussed at length the reason why it's called the Song of Songs. That's not what it really means. Song of Songs sounds like it's the best song in the world. But it really is Shir HaShirim. It's a song which has Shirim in it. There's two songs in one. Because the greatest song, greatest love song, is not when I'm singing to a person, because when I sing and I'm expressing all my feelings, you may not feel the same way. But the Shir HaShirim is the Bnei Israel singing to God and God singing back to us. That's like a duet. When the two people are singing each to one another, that's what it really means. Shir HaShirim really is not Song of Songs. It's a song which has songs in it. And that is the connection. Also, the metaphor of a man and a woman, which teaches us that in our lives we're supposed to look at certain things and connect how we interact with people and be able to channel that emotion to spirituality. So the relationship that one has, a man and a woman have to another, that intense love and bond connection that they have, when a Kohen looks at that picture, they're supposed to remember that feeling that they have and then channel that same feeling and emotion to Hashem.
Where were these?
So it says over here that it was on this actual stand, right? And it says it was underneath these other pictures, underneath the lion, the oxen, and the cherubim.
There's no picture of that. It doesn't show it.
Well, then they would ban this book, you know?
No, but I mean, the lion and the others. It says there are lions and...
No, they don't...
The
Because then they would have had to made a picture of probably the other stuff too. Chassid Shalom. God forbid that's such a picture.
Under the oxen?
Apparently so. Yeah.
The fact that how do you explain to human being what love is? That love God loves you, and you love God. If they don't understand the meaning of love to begin with.
That's right. Very.
So this is a very important part for human being to connect.
Right. Correct. That's exactly right. How could we have a mitzvah to love God? That's right. So that's why God gives us the opportunity to connect to people to understand, to try to improve themselves and to love people so that they will be able to take those emotions and serve God with it too.
In the right atmosphere, in the right place, there's no such thing as lewd.
Load.
I'm thinking
load airport.
That does exist.
In certain circumstances, especially when you're speaking about God.
Right.
Especially.
Right. So the ultimate concept is not only to channel those emotions of love that you feel toward people to God, but also to bring God into those relationships.
But that's a relationship. A relationship is two-sided. It's not a one-sided.
Correct. That's
but
right.
You have to understand what a two-sided relationship is before
correct.
You accept. You.
That's correct. Very good.